Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. The date is December 29th, 2008. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. You're listening to the Monday Brown Bagger. That was a clip taken off the Lou Dobbs show. The reason why we're playing it is because we're going to be having a guest in a couple of minutes who comes from the Iraq Veterans Against War. We're going to be talking about McCain and Obama. And also, I have in the studio with me right now Tanya Hill. And before I hand the mic over to Tanya, I just want to say that I dedicate today's program to the passing of my father, who passed away on December 25th. He passed away suddenly at 9:30 in the morning. So I'd like to dedicate today's program to him. And I'd now like to hand the mic over to Tanya.
Well, thanks, Reg. I just wanted to mention and show some support for the protesters who are at the U.S. consulate right at this moment, 1075 West Pender, if you can join them, and show support for the Palestinians who have been killed in the recent bombings of the Gaza Strip. So there's going to be protests all across Canada and actually all across the world protesting the bombing and the continued bombings of the Gaza Strip.
I know. I was watching that on the news, some clips of it, and they're saying that the current number was up to 200 when it first started. What is the number right now of casualties in that right now?
Yeah, just I was forwarded an email from the Institute of Justice, Peace and Social Movements out of Simon Fraser University, and that was last night. And they're saying at least 200 Palestinians have been killed and over 800 injured in the last Israeli assault on the Gaza Strip. So I'm not sure what's going on right at this moment, but this isn't... they're just, in this email, they're saying it's the largest, they call, massacre in Gaza since Israel occupied Gaza in 1967. And many among the dead are civilians, and the numbers keep mounting.
Well, apparently they're saying that an Israeli soldier was taken prisoner about 2 years ago. But what was the whole cause of this current conflict? I mean, there had to be something that catalyst of it all.
Well, that always seems to be the case. I mean, Israel always, and the U.S., you know, that's why protesters are at the U.S. consulate, because Canada and the U.S. are... backing this recent strike against Gaza Strip. And you're talking about in 2006 or 2007 when an Israeli soldier was kidnapped, and pretty much Israel bombed Lebanon. They went into Lebanon illegally. And this time, yeah, they're saying it has to do with a rocket fire from Hamas. But, you know, what I think about that is it, you know, measured, you know, our government said last year when that happened, or a few years ago, that the response was measured, meaning, yeah, bombing the hell out of another country and the Gaza Strip. I understand that, you know, I'm not for violence, but at the same time, you know, they're always complaining that Hamas, it's Hamas's fault, that it's Palestinians' fault, that, you know, peace talks aren't going ahead. I don't agree with that at all. I think that's an excuse for sure.
Well, we have to remember with any conflict, there's two sides to it. But the way I look at the situation right now, before we get to our guest, I'd like to say that what's going on with Israel right now, that I believe that if you take a look at history back to the Nazi Germany days with the Holocaust and the ethnic cleansing going on at that time in Nazi Germany, you take a look at Israel right now and you're seeing that members of the Israeli government are carrying out the exact same. Now, this is a political statement which the BC Civil Liberties has said that I'm allowed to say. The members of the Israeli government are carrying out the exact same type of ethnic cleansing against the Palestinians that the Nazi Germans did against the Jewish and the non-Jewish during the days when they had they're carrying out their Holocaust. And one thing I question is if we as a people do not stand up right now and say to these people, enough, start sharing the land. You know, one has to question how much longer it's going to be before they start the ovens back up and start throwing innocent people into them.
But at the same time, you know, we have to go to our own governments, Canada and the U.S. They are also backing this, and they're also a big part of this. And the U.S. gives Israel weapons and condones this kind of behavior. Over the past 2 years, the Gaza Strip has been undergoing daily violence, a wide range of humanitarian catastrophe triggered by reduced access to energy, food, and medicines. So, in effect, Gaza is the world's largest open-air prison.
Yeah, that's kind of sad to see that. But at the same time, I'd like to say that I'd like to introduce our guest right now. He's an Iraq war veteran, and he's a member of the Iraq Veteran Against War. He's also an activist. Comes out of Washington, D.C. His name is Adam Kokish. Kokish, excuse me. Adam, are you there?
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you so much. What is your thoughts on what's happening at Israel at this time in regards to how the United States government, members of the United States government, you know, are involved in this? How can we stop this? And, you know, what is your thoughts on everything?
Well, speaking on my own behalf here, I think it's clear that the United States government has a huge hand in that. And you know, this goes back to, you know, the whole concept of non-interventionism and anti-imperialism is, you know, fixing our situation at home first. And there are some serious ways in which we are fueling this conflict. And the idea of how we distribute foreign aid and $40 billion a year to Israel when clearly it's not necessary for the well-being of their people is absurd. And that needs to end. And the second thing, I think, is the recognition of the free elections that happen in Palestine. And for us to do what we can to reach out and just affirm their right to be a sovereign state. And assert that. And if say Israel, hey, well, if your border's in here, then that's where they end. Somebody's got to be on the other side, and they are entitled to rights and recognition. We really turned around on our own idealistic rhetoric, you know, after the elections, the free elections in Palestine, when we kind of denied them, and that was really really shameful, I thought. And so, you know, at very least, we can start with fixing what our contribution to this conflict is.
And also, you were doing a video, it was called Rock Out the Vote, around the time when the elections were happening in the United States. And you were talking about the true face of McCain and basically also Obama and Ron Paul and other third-party candidates. You were talking
It was kind of a fun scene, actually. It wasn't just an event called Rock the Vote or Rock the Debate. It was where the first presidential debate was being held in Oxford, Mississippi, and they had a rally in the Grove, which is where a very huge campus center for them, and you know thousands and thousands of people there. And the organization Rock the Vote held a concert, Rock the Debate, and various student groups were entitled to have speakers. And so the UM Constitutionalist, University of Mississippi, decided that they would invite me to speak on their behalf. And so the crowd was, you know, 50% really enthusiastic McCain and 50% really enthusiastic Obama supporters. And, you know, I wasn't there to blow smoke up anybody's butt who was operating under the illusions that either of these candidates were going to bring about any real change. So I first said, you know, do we have any Obama supporters or do we have McCain supporters here? And I told him a little bit about why I was against the war. I said, well, you know, McCain says he's a veteran, and I called him out on his horrendous record on veterans issues. And then I said, all right, are there any Obama supporters here? And the other half of the crowd went nuts. And you know, then I said, well, let me tell you, I got some bad news about Obama, too. You know, he sold himself as a peace candidate, but let's look at the reality of his position. In Iraq, he wants to keep 50,000 troops there at least indefinitely, with on permanent basis, with an increased reliance on private contractor mercenaries like Blackwater, and he wants a surge in Afghanistan. He's going to downsize and privatize Iraq, and expand our presence in other places in the world. And he's repeating the neocon talking points on Iran. That's anti-imperialist, anti-war, anti-interventionist candidate, or peace candidate by any stretch of the imagination. And then introduce the four independent party candidates: Cynthia McKinney, Bob Barr, Chuck Baldwin, and Ralph Nader, and how they stood apart in terms of the being people who actually stood on their principles. And there were certain things that just by their very nature of that, inevitably, they were all united on. And this was the thing that Ron Paul brought them together for at that press conference in Washington, D.C. a while back. And he got them to agree on a four-point platform, which was balance the budget, restore civil liberties, investigate the Federal Reserve, and our interventionist foreign policy. And to see that principled candidates who are not products of the corporate bipartisan machine all agree on these things. And it was really powerful to see them. And, of course, I ended this little speech with, you really want to rock the vote, or you really want to rock the debate, F the debate, vote third party. And I didn't come out from backstage right away, and for dropping an F-bomb, some of my hosts were afraid that I'd gotten arrested because, you know, this is Mississippi after all.
Also, the next question I have for you is that if you take a look at the Obama upcoming administration, and what we're seeing is major connections over the CFR, and we're also seeing connections over to the prior Bush war criminals. And, you know, what I'm getting out of this is a gapping difference from the change he's offering. And at the same time, you know, are the corporate elitists that have made money off the back of the American people and the war criminals that have been responsible for war crimes for the past 8 years, are they going to be finally held accountable? Or what happens is, are we going to just say deja vu all over again, like you were mentioning earlier?
No, I think Biden said it very succinctly when he said, we're not looking to the past, we're looking forward, which is, you know, a great platitude, which is code for, no, we're not going to prosecute anyone because we don't want to hold ourselves to the same standard. We really don't care about the Constitution. We really don't care about civil liberties. We really don't want to be held to the same standards of non-interventionism or legality in foreign policy because we don't plan to follow any of those rules ourselves. And it's a really clear message to anybody who's paying attention and knows that, you know, when these people speak in platitudes, that's when we have to be the most worried about them, that they're probably pulling something over on us. And with Obama, the biggest one was change itself. And, you know, anybody who looked at the details of his policy knew that there was no real change there. But he ran a brilliant campaign, although it was his to lose. And if you think back to, you know, when we were watching the Democratic and Republican primaries, no one really cared about the Republican primaries except when things got, you know, dramatic, and, you know, a lot of that around Ron Paul. But, you know, people were watching the Democratic primaries much more closely back then because it was like a foregone conclusion after 8 years of Bush. Yeah, the next president is going to be a Democrat, end of story. And then the media over the last, you know, year, because it's their best story, has been presenting it to us as this horse race so that, you know, they can, so that it draws in viewers, basically. And if it's kind of a foregone conclusion, then their biggest story of the year isn't any interesting and nobody cares. So we've got to think back to that and realize that it was Obama's to lose. And in that sense, he ran a very good campaign, even given that huge advantage, where he just projected himself as change and gave a lot of nice speeches and that were brilliant and conveyed some really powerful things, but didn't have any of the details or any of the real policy to back any of it up. And, you know, we went from neocon to neolib, if that, you know, helps people think of it or think about it. But, you know, people were saying, you know, McCain, Obama, you know, at least we got the lesser of two evils. Well, that's a load of crap because you got a prettier face for the same evil, and it's the same people and the same corporate power and the same, you know, Brzezinski type that are running our foreign policy establishment under Clinton, that are running our Defense Department under Gates, that are running our intelligence apparatus as they always have, and nothing that Obama's going to do from the White House is going to take on or challenge or change any of that.
What are you suggesting the U.S. citizens do about this?
Well, I mean,
that's
I really
a big question,
think
but...
that the long term, like when we speak of revolution, you know, we talk about, I mean, to me, what that means more than anything is a revolution of values, a revolution of understanding and commitment, or a sense of commitment to what it means to be a responsible citizen in a constitutional democratic republic, and to really live up to that responsibility, and to take it upon yourself to be involved. There's nothing more greedy or selfish than just saying you're apolitical, and it's abdicating your responsibility keep yourself in a pleasant little bubble, and you have to get out of that. And everybody has to decide for themselves what they can do to be most effective in helping people get out of that and freeing minds. And when that happens, you know, it'll be manifest in the political realm one way or another. But, you know, it doesn't matter if it's Republicans or Democrats or Greens or Libertarians or Constitutionalists, at least in the United States, but, like, it'll happen one way or another at that point. Our political system will come to reflect it, hopefully through peaceful elections. And that's one way that we can help, you know, wake people up and get people involved. But, the revolution is between the ears. The revolution is in your mind.
And could you tell our listening audience how members of the Department of Defense have attempted to smear your reputation and to carry out unjust investigation against you by an officer? One officer is Major John White, being one of these individuals.
Yeah, I don't know if they were coming after me individually, but there was definitely some legal harassment by the Marine Corps against a number of our members for participation in activities with Iraq Veterans Against the War. That led to an attempt by the Marine Corps to shut us up through a variety of private threats that, in my case, blew up into a big public case when I challenged them on it. But they were going to be attempting to take away, health and education benefits from various veterans who had served because they were speaking out, sometimes wearing parts of uniform that were actually not in violation of any rules, because when you're in active reserves, as we were, the rules of the UCMJ pertaining to the uniform regulations don't apply, but they used that against us. And, I stood up to them, and we it kind of backfired, as these things often do when authoritarian personalities are manifest this way. And it blew up into a pretty big public case, and we ended up in the legal sense kind of wrestling it to a tie, but they haven't messed with any other members of IVAW through that channel, at least. Took that away from them, and it was a huge boon for our organization. But we have other evidence of the Department of Defense tracking our organization through the Talon program, and you always find out years later when the tapes are released, who they were listening to back in the day. But we know enough to learn from what's happened in the past and learn from people who have gone before us. And in this day and age, you have to assume that none of your communications are secure, and I don't mean it's paranoid, but we're definitely aware that there are people in the establishment that have it out for us. And it's also manifest in some practical ways in terms of legal harassment. There was a case in Long Island a couple months ago with the debate in Hofstra, the last presidential debate, where one of our members, Nick Morgan, got trampled by a horse. So there's, I've been arrested 7 times, 8 times now and never convicted, and that really should tell you something.
With the First Amendment in the U.S. Constitution, it basically says you have freedom of speech. Yet what happened was that you and there was a couple other people who were arrested for just posting signs on public property. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah, that's taken back. That was September 6th last year. We were deliberately... disobeying the directives, which were contrary to the law, of the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C., on behalf of the Answer Coalition, who we were organizing with for the September 15th anti-war rally, which was one of the biggest we've had in a long time. We had over 100,000 people in the streets and 5,000 engaging in civil disobedience with a dying at the Capitol. But this was, a week and a half earlier, 12 days earlier, September 6th, we were putting up posters and we held a press conference to call out the MPD because they were fining the Answer Coalition for posters that they were putting up within the regulations. And so we called a press conference that, we are going to keep putting up posters, we are doing this within the regulations, and we are going to fight this one out in court. And just to show the defiance, myself and Tina Richards, we went up and put up posters on one of these with wheat paste, water-soluble, biodegradable wheat paste, on an electric utility box in front of the White House at Lafayette Park. And city regulations say you're allowed to do that, 3 per block. And as we were doing it, the police tried to break up the press conference, and then they sent in a SWAT team and a cop, another horse-mounted cop, to disperse the crowd of reporters and was pushing them out of the way. So it really got ridiculous and out of hand, and of course we were I think released on our own recognizance the next day. We both did about 24 hours in jail. And then another guy who was there, Ian Thompson, after one of the police officers moved a bucket of wheat paste, he went and picked it up. It was his bucket, and got arrested for assaulting a police officer. This is freaking absurd. But in the day and age that we've come to, anything that interferes with a police officer in the performance of his duties is now categorized as assaulting a police officer. Tina Richards and I were acquitted. He was convicted. And this guy's a lawyer in Los Angeles. And I think he got debarred because of it. But, what we're up against is very real for some of us. And is very manifest for a lot of people that don't have the opportunity to speak out the way that we do. But these are our symptoms of the failure of our political culture, that we allow this kind of authoritarianism to run rampant in our society.
And I'd like to briefly add to our listening audience, the people that think it's only happened in the United States, well, I guess you should wake up, because Harper promised transparency in his government, and the only thing he delivered was exact same. And also, I remember, I am a veteran of the Canadian Armed Forces. I served for almost 9 years, 86 to 95, with one UN tour to Iran in 1988. And for writing a fictional novel, which is a political statement, which I'm entitled to say, I was harassed, I was threatened with death, I was hit in a sidewalk, I was threatened with jail, my car was almost ridden off the highway, I was forced to leave Canada for almost 5 years of my life, and I ended up down in the United States of America, and that's why I believe that Canada and United States should regain their rights under the Constitution, their constitutions, remain free under their own flags, no North American Union, to individual countries. At the same time, I'd also like to say this to all you British monarch supporters, please leave. We don't want you here anymore. We want the Republic of Canada. We want to enter into a partnership with First Nations and non-First Nations. And we want to have several our ties with the British monarchy. And while the British monarchy is leaving, at the same time, please leave United States and leave the Federal Reserve in United States in the hands of the American people only. And with that said, I heard you on the Ron Paul convention when you were saying that you want your country back and everything. And you know what? And also, I also saw a YouTube with you standing there with a sign in McCain's convention. And what I saw was a true, brave person. And I'd like to thank you for both the speech and standing there. What I'd like to know is that what the Chicken Hawks, what they did they do anything to you for standing up for your rights to freedom of speech?
Well, there's kind of a long story there about, you know, how everything went down that evening. But, you know, I've been blessed with my circumstance that I can put on a shirt that says Iraq Veterans Against the War and fill it pretty well and command a certain amount of respect that way. I was cuffed at one point, but very politely, by a couple of female police officers on the outside who just took my ID and let me go. But I mean, it was just such an easy target to make such fools out of the people that were there cheering for McCain, the real, you know, authoritarian types. Because, you know, there were Ron Paul people in the room, and a lot more than the RNC would like to admit. But they weren't there cheering blindly when McCain came out. You know, they weren't chanting USA at me and cutting off their own candidate to do it. And to get their attention from a balcony way up in the corner of the room, they were such suckers. It was ridiculous, but it shows you, you know, the kind of the mentality of the people that will support a candidate like McCain. But you know what? I could have just as easily hung up a banner, and if I had the opportunity, I would have been there protesting Obama too. And wake up, this is not an anti-war candidate, you know.
And also, it looks like we're getting close to running out of time. We're going to bring our next guest pretty quick. But I was wondering if you could leave any contact information with our listening audience, any email, and also any website that you really would like our listening audience to visit, to check out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the first, first and foremost, Iraq Veterans Against the War. There are a lot of issues with war resistors that we're supporting, you know, crossing borders, getting some kind of sanctuary in Canada and in other countries. And so there's definitely stuff that the Canadian people can do to get involved in supporting Iraq Veterans Against the War, and just, you know, telling people about us and encouraging resistance and you know, getting involved any way you can. We do have a chapter in a couple chapters now in Canada. I'm sorry, I forget where they are, but those are on the site. And if anybody would like to get in contact with me, my email is really easy. It's adam.kokesh, K-O-K-E-S-H, @gmail.com. And I have a blog, but I haven't been keeping up, and that's kokesh.blogspot.com.
And also, I'd like to add, Adam, that I re-released my first novel that I wrote and copywrote back in April 20th of 2001 in the Library of Congress. And what I'm going to be doing is I'm donating 50 cents off of each ebook sold to the war resistors. And the reason why I'm doing that is that I'm giving it back to my brothers and sisters. You know, I may not have much in life, but as much as I can, I will give back to my brothers and sisters. I believe anyone that wore the uniform is basically one a gigantic brotherhood and sisterhood, and we have to do our best to protect the ones that are basically being outspoken. We have to do our best to protect the ones that are trying to find safety in a sea of darkness, and that's why we have to stand up right now.
Even Kennedy spoke of the day when the war resistor will have as much an appreciation by society as the warrior does. And that's really important that we bring about that shift, that we achieve that society.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Adam. We'll get you back on again because you are such a colorful individual, and you're truly standing for all people as you're trying to reunite the flame of freedom in the United States. And I hope that that exact same flame of freedom heads up here to Canada and will basically tell our political parties here, we don't want the old anymore. We want new. We want to get rid of the Queen off of Canadian soil and all of her henchmen and henchwomen. They're trying to put authoritarian upon the people. So thank you so much, Adam.
And I'd
like to remind you, this is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. You're listening to the Monday Brown Bagger, and we're going to take a brief break right now, and then we'll come back with our next guest. Thank you so much, Adam.